this is all mockable.
Shall we test this side too?
I don't think so.
All right.
I have a question here about your social life and family, vacations, hobbies.
Well, as the children were growing up, you know, I'm a sort of a workaholic, and one of the important things was to live close to the my lab here and my work, and I so as a result, we do live in 4 minutes away in Squirrel Hill, across the other side of the park, and I've always made it a almost a standing rule that when I was in town, and no matter what, I would always have dinner with the children, at least that much, and so we rarely missed an evening dinner together. I may have come home, had dinner, and then come back to work, but at that, as the children were growing up, that was always done. In terms of hobbies, there have been so many people who have tried to get me, they feel that I need a hobby, and I think it's more traumatic for them that I don't have a hobby than it is for me. Actually, I don't like golf. I abhor it. I am more of a watcher in sports now than a participant, and I'm not really much of a watcher anymore. I'm interested in music and art, and my wife is a docent at the museum, and she, I guess, force feeds me with that, and so I have been fortunate to have that as something to fall back on. But I guess you must say that most of my efforts in life are just circled around our family and work.
Oh, do you belong to a temple?
We're members of Rite of Shalom. Not very. Our kids went there. Again, we went through the crisis of going from a conservative to a reform synagogue, which I guess we thought was important to, as in order to upward mobility.
Why was it a crisis?
Well, I'm not really, you know, I mean, a crisis in the sense that one was changing from what one had been comfortable with. As a result, you see, it was Peter's principle. We moved into the Rite of Shalom. We never felt very good about that, but we would never want to go back to the to the thing that we left. So there we are. And after the kids got confirmed and all, we still go to temple, and we're again members of the temple. And that's about it. We just don't have time for the nice amenities that go on.
Could I ask, how do you contrast the way you were raised with the way you raised your children? Discipline, etc.?
Oh, sure. More discipline, more rigidity, less, you know, our children were raised in, with the influences that our kids went to, you know, they went to different kinds of schools. They went to Falk School up here, which is which believes more in giving children a free kind of letting them do what they want to do, almost.
How do you view that?
Well, in retrospect, I don't view it with very much comfort. I wish that I had done differently. I feel that not our kids have turned out. I think they would have turned out in any kind of situation. But I am a great believer in discipline and structuring rather than the laissez-faire kind of approach to child raising. But that, I guess, is only as one gets older and becomes more, gets smarter.
Do you belong to any organizations in the community?
Such as?
Oh, there's B'nai B'rith, and there's the Elks, and the Masons.
Not really. No. Not an organization, personally.
How do you feel politically?
I've always been I don't like labels for anything. I don't like labels about what I am in my profession or what I am in my personal life. I would say that we've always been, or I have been, a little left of center. I always beware of people with causes, and that was always my credo. I'm more liberal, but not to the point where of the Americans for Democratic Action kind of thing or this or that. I went through in my younger, in high school, members of the YPSLs, the Young People's Socialist League, when I was a senior.
Never heard of that one.
You never did?
No.
They used to meet on the top of Herman's Baker Shop. Did you remember Herman's Baker
Shop?
Yes, I
remember Herman's.
Phillips and Murray?
Yes, I do.
And, you know, that was there were a bunch of us in high school who considered ourselves to be intellectuals, and of course that was the thing to do, was to be very liberal. And I think in my more mature years, I wasn't that liberal, but I was always interested in liberal things, liberal causes. So
you were never...
But not enough to be a flag raiser.
You were never involved with the Army in time of war?
I was in the Army. I was stationed in this country, and then I was discharged.
What were those dates?
Pardon?
What were the dates of that?
That was 19... Well, I was in my senior year in medical school, of course, and then that would be 44, 46.
Were you a surgeon?
No, not then, no.
But they did make good use of your...
Not really.
No? That's the Army.
Were you stationed in the hospital?
I was at Carlisle for a while.
I see. You never went overseas?
I never went overseas.
Well, we discussed the children, and our next question, how do you view your accomplishments, successes and failures?
Oh, well, nobody's ever satisfied. If they are, they should quit, you know. I always feel that my best is still ahead of me, and what's been is done with. And one can wish one had done more. My main interest has been in academic medicine. I've always, when I left the Mercy Hospital, finished my residency at the University of Pennsylvania, I came back to the university and I established a laboratory of surgical research here, which didn't exist. And I've been interested in, as a surgeon, not in, and so I've been in the university all this time. I have never been in the position where I had to be in private practice to make a living. I've had, my income comes from the university, it always has, and it's given me the opportunity to be free to do the kinds of things that I wanted to do intellectually and academically, and the great accomplishments will come from research they have, and that's why I'm doing research. And I have been since 1955 involved in cancer research, and that's almost my total interest.
What directed you to that particularly, doctor?
It's a good question. When I was, I can tell you two stories that would think I wouldn't be directed to that. And when I was at the Mercy Hospital, one of the most impressive people was a medical doctor down there who always said two things you must keep away from is the liver and cancer, because you'll just get lost in the woods. And then when I did come back here to the university and I started my laboratory in 1955, I was offered a position to go to Roswell Park. They were setting up a cancer institute there.
What is Roswell Park?
In Buffalo, Roswell Park Memorial Cancer Institute, which is one of the leading cancer institutes in the country. And there were some young people that were going there to set this up, and somebody wrote me and asked me if I'd like to come along, and that was in 1955. And I said, no, at that time I was interested in other kinds of research, and I just wasn't interested in cancer at all. But by 1956, I was already starting to do some research in cancer. I think it just came about, from, as most things do, by serendipity, and our interest was mainly in the lack of knowledge in dealing with cancer patients and realizing how little was known and how authoritative people were talking about what they were doing and how they were doing it. And then when one went and looked up some of the literature, one found there really wasn't much substance for what they were doing. And this got us, my brother and I, we spent 10 years studying tumor metastasis, how tumors spread. And I wasn't at all interested in breast cancer at that time. I had no real interest whatsoever in it. But we were interested in finding out how cancers do spread and what makes them spread and all this kind of thing, and understanding more about the biology. And so then over the years, due to our research from about 1956 to 1960-something, 65, I guess, we reached the point where we really now had to put into operation test some of the things that we'd learned in the laboratory in the clinic. And breast cancer was such a pervasive disease, it occurs with such frequency, the commonest cause of cancer in women, occurs in about 110,000 women a year, and so on. So it looked like a good model for us, and for me in particular, being a surgeon, to test some of the hypotheses and principles from the laboratory. And that's really how I got interested in breast cancer, not to save women's breasts or this or that or whatever, but mainly to see whether the kinds of things that we had done in the laboratory were really true in patients. And it so happens that they are. And as a result of this, we've sort of, I think, revolutionized the concept of tumor spread and meaning. This is what's now led to more conservative surgery and to the use of chemotherapy and all this kind of thing that we've been plugging away at. And making advances in curing people.
I've read some of the articles in Newsweek and in the Chronicle and so on.
Well, they're not very well written.
No, they're not.
Sorry to say.
But I was interested in how you came in contact with this Dr. Veronese in Milan.
That's just a ridiculous thing.
It is.
That was just the inability of medical, of newspaper writers to be able to handle two issues at the same time.
I see. You were not connected with
him. I'm not connected with him, nor did I even say I'm reputed to have said.
I see.
We have our own trials going in this country. I know he's a very good friend of mine. I know all these people very well. Mm-hmm. But that has nothing to do with anything that I'm doing. It's just totally, once again, the garbling of the press, and that's another chapter that I can tell you all about. Mm-hmm. I've dealt with the press over the last 20 years many, many times in many ways. And you just can't believe what you read in the paper, because most of the people who write things for, here's Time Magazine who wrote this, and I spent a lot of time talking to the woman in Time Magazine who didn't have, she interviewed me, and she didn't have any more idea about what this subject was than I do about Russian aviation. And yet, there she is writing an article which millions of people read and which look upon it as a sort of an authoritative thing. Same thing with the New York Times. I had my picture on the front page of the New York Times, and Jane Brody, who I've known for many years and is considered to be one of the best science writers in the United States, I spent 45 minutes talking to her, and then I saw the article in the New York Times, and it just didn't, I couldn't believe it. It wasn't anything that we talked about, and I was sure that she hadn't written it. Well, 2 days later, I was going to call her and tell her what I thought of it, but I didn't. 2 days later, I got a handwritten letter from her stating that the New York Times never ceases to amaze her, and she showed me the copy of the article that she had submitted to her editor, which really was quite different from what appeared in the New York Times. So, I think that kind of thing is more, it doesn't bother me in the least, because I'm convinced that what most people read or know about today, they forget about tomorrow. But I think it does demonstrate that those people who think they're so well informed because they read the newspapers and the publications with such meticulousness. My mother is that way. My mother, at the age of 86, is a very well-read woman, but she's convinced that she knows what's going on. And really, by her source of information, which are the common sources of information. And if this is the only thing that people have to go by, they just don't. They're being mistaken if they think they're well informed. So anyhow, that's Varanasi.
So your affiliations have been mainly in this country rather than...
No, I have eyes. As a matter of fact, I'm a member of... There is an Italian-American liaison, or sort of an organization to foster better Italian-American relationships in medicine, and I'm on the board of directors of this foundation, which is headquartered in New York, and I'm interested in fostering those relations, but I'm also interested in, as I said not 2 weeks ago in Washington, I'm more interested in seeing the United States make the gains. I'm still enough of a nationalist to believe that I'd rather see the United States do it first than somebody else. That's that. I am also involved heavily with the National Cancer Program. I'm a member of the President's Cancer Panel. I've been for the last 2 years, I was appointed by President Carter, and I still haven't been unappointed by Reagan, so maybe I'll continue. But there's a three-man panel we act as sort of the board of overseers for the National Cancer Institute and the cancer program.
Were you funded under the Carter administration?
Oh, I've been funded under all administrations.
I see. How do you look to funding under this administration?
Well, funding is becoming increasingly more difficult. Obviously, the budget cutbacks are going to affect all of science, and it will affect us as well.
Any other organizations, medical or study?
I'll give you my CV. There are 2-3 pages of them. I'm a member of editorial boards of about 10 cancer journals. I've been in all kinds of committees at the National Cancer Institute, so on. I don't know what I'm a member of the outside board of overseers of Columbia University's cancer program, also George Washington University, so I sort of have a knowledge about what goes on around the country. Most of my efforts don't relate to Pittsburgh, they relate to outside.
Does breast cancer seem to be on the increase?
Only because there are more women, more population. The population gets bigger, therefore the number of cases increases. But there's no good evidence that, per 100,000 women the rate is going up. Although it may, it's a slow kind of a, you have to, we don't know what all the people assure us that the pill and all these kinds of things have had no effect. I think we'll have to wait another 10 years before we can be so sure.
Do you look to continue in this field?
Well, until a better one comes along. I'm involved in research in general. And,
but this is your
until
main...
Until breast cancer's conquered, I'll continue. I don't have any plans for retiring. I don't believe in retirement as long as I have my mental senses and people don't tell me I'm getting senile. I'll continue.
Are any of your children married, Dr. Fisher?
No, none of them are married or even... is there anything on the horizon?
I see.
Well, all I can say is thank you very much. And as far as I'm concerned, I've left out some of these extraneous things. I feel we've covered as much as we can. Have you?
Very good.
I've skipped some of the gibberish, shall we say.
What, for example, represents gibberish?
Oh, a contest, Pittsburgh today with Pittsburgh yesterday. You did sort of go into it. How do you view Pittsburgh Jewish life and its place in the general community?
Do you have any observations on that?
Well, become very, just as everybody does and should, become very unhappy about the various the serious Jewish problems, such as the intermarriage one and the problem of more and more young Jewish people who do not have a strong sense of identity. I think that's too bad. One can, without being a religionist necessarily, there's a difference between identity and religion. One still must know what one's roots are and where one comes from and what one is, and not try to push this aside. I feel strongly about that. We've both tried to indoctrinate our children in this. I don't know.
Do they have a strong Jewish consciousness?
Not really sure. I think I think two of them do. I won't tell you which two, but I think two do. One less. Yet they were all, the same influence. I don't know what it requires. I think that I do know what it requires. I think it requires that the parents have that strong Jewish identity. If the parents don't have it, the children sure as hell won't get it, by and large. They may. It'll be an aberration if they do. It's just like smoking. Most of the non-smokers most of the kids who don't smoke come from families where parents don't smoke. And if parents smoke, kids will smoke, by and large. And the same thing with Jewish identity. I think that's where it all starts. And whether ritual is something that reinforces this identity, can one have this strong identity without ritual? And each generation that gets further and further away from ritual, is this the reason or what?
But don't you think there seems to be a return to it?
That's right. And I think that's probably one of my, when I talked about my crisis at the Road of Shalom, I think coming from a Orthodox or a conservative synagogue to one where ritual was sort of not strong, that was where the crisis occurred. Now, children who grow through that and don't have that kind of strong ritual, what happens to their children, and so on and so forth? What replaces this? I don't know.
Did you observe holidays in your home?
Oh, mm-hmm. Holidays. We still do. Mm-hmm. We're very, very, and that our kids all still identify. They come home for the holidays, and this kind of, if it's at all possible. I think that, one must expect something to get it. And if you don't expect it, you're not going to get it.
Well, we've been very interested in your accomplishments, and we'll continue to follow them with interest, being women particularly.
Well, it's a serious problem. We've done a little bit of good, and we hope to do a lot more.
This interview took place at Scave Hall Medical School, University of Pittsburgh, on July 30th, 1981, at 10 a.m.